This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Values Voter Eve edition of Washington Watch. We're broadcasting this evening from the site of the 12th Annual Values Voter Summit here at the Omni Shoreham Hotel in Washington, D.C. It's the largest gathering of social conservatives in the nation, and everything starts tomorrow morning. I hope you can join us. If not, don't go away, because I'll have information later about how you can still be a part. But first, the administration has been very busy today. Among the biggest news, President Trump has signed a health care executive order that seeks to provide you, that's right, you the consumer, more insurance alternatives. Brian Blaze, with the Trump administration special assistant to the president for economic policy, will join us with in-depth analysis of the order in just a moment. And Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North will be here to discuss the latest on the international affairs front, as President Trump is expected to make a major announcement tomorrow about the Iran nuclear deal. Colonel North is also one of the featured speakers here at the Values Voter Summit. And James O'Keefe's Project Veritas is at it again. They've released a video exposing the growing bias of the mainstream media. No surprise, the New York Times is under the magnifying glass. James will be here with the details. And in the wake of Harvey Weinstein's scandal, Hollywood is actually teaching us something. I'll talk about it later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you'd like more information about the Values Voter Summit, it kicks off in earnest tomorrow morning with President Trump speaking. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, or ValuesVoterSummit.org. It'll be happening all weekend here in Washington, D.C. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me, at T. Perkins. All right, after months of failed attempts to repeal and replace Obamacare, earlier today, President Donald Trump took executive action in an effort to provide more alternatives to health insurance in an attempt to increase competition and drive down the escalating costs. Here's what he had to say earlier as he announced this executive order.
Promoting health care, choice, and competition all across the United States. This is going to be something that millions and millions of people will be signing up for, and they're going to be very happy. This will be great health care. So congratulations to everybody.
Well, and folks across the country are going to be applauding if the price goes down of health care and more alternatives are available. With us now is Brian Blaze, a special assistant to the president for economic policy. Brian, the White House is saying the administration still wants to see complete repeal and replace Obamacare, but this is a first essential step in addressing the growing cost of health care.
Tony, great to be with you. The administration was hoping that Congress would repeal and replace Obamacare by now. That hasn't happened. Obamacare has been a disaster for millions of Americans, particularly middle-class Americans that don't get coverage through work. They've seen premiums more than double from 2013 to 2017. A choice decline. This year we have one-third of counties where there's only a single insurer selling plans on the exchange. Next year, it's going to be about half of counties where there's only a single insurer selling on the exchange. We've seen small businesses and their employees harmed by Obamacare. In 2010, about half of individuals who worked for small businesses got coverage through the small business. Now that's down to about a third. And what we're taking steps today on opening up additional affordable health insurance options for those middle-class Americans. We're specifically looking to expand association health plans to make it easier for small employers to join together in order to offer more affordable coverage to their workers. And we're looking at opening up a market it's called short-term limited duration plans. And those are plans that are not regulated by Obamacare. They have far cheaper premiums. The Obama administration last year, since that market was growing as the exchanges were deteriorating, the Obama administration tried to shut that market down, and we want to undo what the Obama administration did last year.
Hey, Brian, essentially what is happening are people who had health care primarily through their employers, small businesses in particular, they're losing their health care because of the rising costs. Many of these employers are saying we can no longer provide this. This is trying to, as I understand it, as I've read through what the president did today, it is to increase competition, driving down costs, therefore making it available to more workers. Is that accurate?
That's exactly right. I mean, the EO directs the entire executive branch to focus on increased competition and choice in healthcare markets. And we've seen large employers not be as adversely affected by Obamacare because they're governed by different set of insurance regulation. What we've really seen is the small employers that have been crushed under Obamacare's weight. And what we want to do is create the opportunity for small businesses to basically get on parity and be able to access the same regulations that large businesses now have.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. If you hear unusual noise in the background, it's not my kids or the staff in the studio. It is the Values Voters Summit. It's the 12th annual. We're here at the Omni Shoreham Hotel, where Brian's boss will actually be here tomorrow kicking us off. President Trump will be one of our first speakers tomorrow here. I'm talking with Brian Blaze from the White House. He is an advisor to the president on economic issues, economic policy. Brian, okay, let's go to the heart of the matter. I understand there's growing concern that if left untouched, and I know you made this clear at the beginning, the president's made it clear he wants to repeal and replace Obamacare. The House moved in that direction. The Senate did not. There's great concern that the health care system is imploding, and the access to it through insurance is becoming very difficult, and this is a stopgap measure. Is that clear an accurate understanding?
I think the best way to understand this is that it provides relief to people that have been most harmed by Obamacare. So it increases opportunities for individuals to buy more affordable coverage, and it sort of starts a process. It's the beginning of the actions that the administration is taking.
So there's more to come?
Yeah, I mean, the Obama administration, there were 800 rules and pieces of guidance that they put in place to implement Obamacare, and many of those are problems, and we're looking at doing as much as we can to promote choice and competition and to sort of reduce the stranglehold that Obamacare had. And there's problems, obviously, that go beyond Obamacare and the healthcare sector. I mean, one of the things that Obamacare did was increase consolidation in healthcare markets. So we clearly have 50% of the country next year with only a single insurer on the exchange. That's not competition. We have many parts of the country where they're dominated by one large hospital system. That's not competition either. I mean, we need to focus on all of these problems in order to lower prices and increase affordable choices for Americans.
Now, is there not still concern, Brian, that we're kind of working at the margins? Is my understanding as I see this that we have to get to the heart of the problem, and that is Obamacare, and that the system is imploding because it's an unworkable system.
Yeah, Congress needs to repeal and replace Obamacare. This executive order doesn't do anything on the Medicaid expansion side. I mean, we're doing the most we can within the law to free people from Obamacare. But there's clearly limits to what we can do. But we think today is an important first step. And really, through the three actions that were identified, the association health plans and trying to expand employers' ability to join across states, opening
which
up.
Which is big. I think that's big.
Yeah, I mean, it's potentially a huge step. The short-term insurance products that aren't subject to any of Obamacare regulations, we think that's going to be an important tool for potentially millions of consumers, and making it easier on employers to basically provide tax free payments to their employees for the employees to then buy the insurance that they want. The Obama administration prohibited employers from doing that, and we're looking to reverse that. We think that those can have pretty profound effects and are a start in providing the relief that the American people need.
Brian Blaze, let me ask you this question for those that would say, well, look, the president's doing the same thing that President Obama did. He's using executive orders, the pen and the phone. How would you respond to that?
That is not true. Of the three main actions that are identified, two of them would simply be undoing actions that the Obama administration took. And we are going through formal
undoing actions that Obama took by executive order.
Correct. Well, he took through the regulatory process, the actions that they took to sort of prop up the exchanges and force as many people as possible into the exchanges by taking away choices that they had outside of the Obamacare exchange system. So we're looking at sort of just rescinding some actions that the Obama administration took. And we are going to go through the formal notice and rulemaking process where there'll be an opportunity for the public to comment. The president's actions today didn't, the order was to the agencies to consider these policy changes in sort of the standard way that regulations are developed.
Mm-hmm. Brian, one final question for you, and I want to thank you for taking time to join us this evening. I think it's a very important policy development, this executive order by the president today addressing the federal government and directing agencies to find ways to increase competition in the healthcare system, insurance system. Let me ask you this. Would this executive order encounter some of the same opposition from the medical associations, the consumer groups, and even the insurers, the same coalition that blocked congressional action?
That's a good question. It's possible. I mean, there's a lot of special interest groups that are invested in the current status quo. I think with insurers, you're going to see some that are a division there. Insurers that are bigger participants in the Obamacare exchanges probably be less supportive, but insurers that are open to sort of developing innovative coverage options outside the exchange, they're going to be enthusiastic about the changes that we're making.
Well,
and small businesses, and the business community is very supportive of the additional flexibility that they're going to have to design coverage that's more affordable and valuable for their workforce.
Well, and Brian, I also think that the average worker, the average citizen, the family is encouraged by this, that the president's not giving up. He's going to continue to do everything he can within the law, to keep the promises that he made to the American people, even if others on Capitol Hill will not.
Absolutely. The president is committed, and we're really enthusiastic about the steps that we took today.
All right. Brian Blaze, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate you being with us today on Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me. Have a great conference.
All right. Thanks so much. Brian Blaze, Special Assistant to the President for Economic Policy, talking about today's announcement, President Trump taking actions by executive order to try to increase competition in the health care insurance markets, driving down costs, making health care insurance more accessible and affordable. All right, when we come back, we still have a lot more Washington Watch to come from the site of the 12th Annual Values Voter Summit here at the Omni Shoreham Hotel in Washington, D.C. Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North will be joining us, James O'Keefe as well. So, hey, we got a lot more. This has got a lot happening this weekend. So if you can make it, try and get here. All right? Even if you have to drive all night, it'll be worth the drive. Just drink an extra cup of coffee. All right, don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch after this.
We've gone from give me liberty or give me death to take care of me, please. What has happened to the American spirit? Our colleges were once bastions of free speech. Now they're bastions of speech codes. Our culture once rewarded independence. Now it rewards victimhood. Parents once taught their kids how to fend for themselves. Now any parent who tries may get a visit from the police. In a talk about his new book, Not a Daycare, Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, takes a hard look at what's happening around the country, including demands for safe spaces and trigger warnings at universities like Yale, Brandeis, and Oberlin, and digs in his heels against the sad and dangerous dumbing down of the American spirit. Dr. Piper has become known for his passionate defense of intellectual freedom, and he challenges the intolerant tolerance of today's academic community. Go to frc.org/speakers to watch. Again, that's frc.org/speakers.
We need you in Washington, D.C. That's right. America is built on the courageous spirit of its people, and it is our duty to preserve the great nation by sustaining religious liberty, defending the unborn, and protecting the family. Take a stand for faith, family, and freedom at the Values Voters Summit on October 13th through 15th in Washington, D.C. Hear from invited and confirmed speakers like President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Michelle Bachmann, Secretary Ben Carson, Ambassador Nikki Haley, Kellyanne Conway, Dana Loesch, Franklin Graham, Ollie North, Alveda King, Kevin Sorbo, Phil Robertson, and many more. This is the place to network and meet up with people and organizations that share a Christian worldview and to discuss important issues that will shape the future of our country. Join us at the Values Voters Summit on October 13th through 15th in Washington, D.C. Register now at valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As Senior Director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Hear Mr. Arnakis discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, broadcasting live from the site of the 12th Annual Values Voters Summit here in Washington, D.C. at the Omni Shoreham Hotel. Still room for you. We kick off in earnest tomorrow morning. We'll start with a congressional panel, some of our congressional leaders. We'll hear from the chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, Mark Meadows, and then we'll hear from the commander-in-chief himself. President Donald Trump will be speaking here at the Values Voter Summit tomorrow. Kellyanne Conway will be here. We got a great lineup of speakers this year. We always do. But Judge Roy Moore will be here. Steve Bannon will be here. Laura Ingraham will be here. Dana Loesch. Just great lineup. So if you can get here, and be a part of the 12th Annual Values Voter Summit, the premier gathering of social conservatives here in the United States. And if you can't get here, you can still participate. ValuesVoter.org, ValuesVoter.org. We'll be broadcasting it via the web tomorrow. So if you can't get here, you can watch free online beginning at about, I think we're starting 8:45 a.m. Eastern time. So go to the website, valuesvoter.org, and you can participate and be a part of the 12th Annual Values Voter Summit. All right, waiting for Colonel North to give us a call. While I'm waiting for him, I want to go to this story. You know, this is not the Inquirer, okay? So I don't really like to talk about all those grocery store aisle topics. But it's everywhere, this Harvey, and I'm not talking about the hurricane, I'm talking about Weinstein. Here's a LA Times story today, quoting the second paragraph. In less than a week, a mounting scandal over allegations of sexual harassment and assault have rapidly consumed the once powerful film mogul, the entertainment industry, and the entertainment industry as a whole, with fresh accusations against Weinstein continuing to emerge. Organizations and individuals across Hollywood and in politics are scrambling to distance themselves from him, while large and uncomfortable questions are arising about what the scandal reveals about the culture of Hollywood, end quote. Yeah, it's very reflective coming from the Los Angeles Times. And It's not often we learn anything from Hollywood these days, but I actually think we can learn something from this. One is truth is not relative, you know, and morality is not malleable. Even though they have convinced themselves, and this is the dangers. You see, if we live our lives that according to an understanding that truth is transcendent, that there is truth, there is true truth, and that there are moral laws that are irrevocable. They come from our Creator. And He created us, He created the rules, and these moral laws, which are evident in creation, Paul talks about those in Romans chapter 2. We have to understand those are there. And if we violate them, we do so at our own risk, our own peril. But if you anchor yourself to truth, whether it's popular today or not, you'll be safe tomorrow. But if you go with what the popular culture votes to be moral today, they could shift tomorrow. And I think that's what Hollywood is showing us. Look, stick with truth. There are moral laws. They're established by God. And if you live that way, you're going to live a lot safer. Might be ridiculed, might be mocked, but I guarantee you won't have to worry about them changing. All right, with us now, our good friend, Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, one of the keynote speakers here at the Values Voters Summit. And, of course, you know him from the Fox News Channel. Colonel, welcome back to Washington Watch.
It's great to be with you, brother. I'm looking forward to being with you tomorrow.
All right, Semper Fi. I'm just looking forward to you being here. Hope you can keep the General Boykin, in line while you're here.
We do all we can, but as you know, I'm a lieutenant colonel. He's a lieutenant general.
I know, and he's also from the Army, so there's not much we can do there. We're starting with a deficit to begin with.
We start with praying for him.
That's why. And then we'll lay hands on it. Let's talk a little bit about, before we get into what you're going to talk about here at the Values Voter Summit, President Trump, a lot on his plate. I mean, we were just talking about the domestic issues, Obamacare and all this other stuff. But from a foreign policy standpoint, we got North Korea. We've got the we're expecting an announcement tomorrow on the Iran nuclear deal. The president's got a lot he's handling.
Yes, he does. And unfortunately, our colleagues, my colleagues in the so-called mainstream media, appear to be just almost universally opposed to whatever it is he suggests that he wants to do, his agenda. His confirmations of everybody except, I guess, Judge Gorsuch. It's become a very, very difficult time. Funny, I've never seen anything like this in my time, and I've been around this town since 1981.
Well, and you saw some pretty challenging times yourself back during the Reagan administration. But let's put this in perspective for our listeners. Well, it is politically tumultuous. We live in an extremely dangerous period of time.
We do. In fact, the defense guidance that was published by Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis here just a few weeks ago lays out threats that we face. And quite honestly, without criticizing my former lieutenant when I was a captain, many of the things that are not in that defense guidance are almost as big a threat as Chinese and the Russians, and the North Korean nukes and the Iranians, all of which the president is very aware of. And unfortunately, as you and I know well, we're not rebuilding our military nearly as quickly as we need to. And that's one of the things I'm going to address with our friends tomorrow. The bottom line of it is, this: if there's ever a time for prayer for this country, this is it. Because domestically, we're at odds with one another. They try to pin that on the president's neck, and it's not right to do so. It was there before he got here. Most of the problems that we see today in our foreign policy, our national security, our defense, our diplomacy, are the residue of the last administration. 8 years of misfeasance, malfeasance, and nonfeasance. The kind of thing that one would have hoped we'd never see in a presidency. And now this president has to deal with all of it, to include what we saw today, trying to do whatever he can with a Congress that is almost completely uncooperative to fix health care.
Colonel, we're up against a break. Can you hold on for just 2 minutes? Because I want you to tell our listeners what you're going to be talking about here at the Values Voter Summit this weekend. Folks, don't go away. We're coming back on the other side of the break with more Colonel Oliver North. Don't go away.
Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers. The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Listening to Washington Watch, I'm Tony Perkins. We're broadcasting live from the site of the 12th Annual Values Voter Summit at the Omni Shoreham Hotel here in Washington, D.C. Still time to get here. We kick off in earnest tomorrow morning. President Donald Trump will be one of our first speakers. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Follow the links over to see how you can be a part of this premier gathering of social conservatives here in our nation's capital. All right. Still joining us, still on the line, Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North. Colonel, thanks for sticking around.
Oh, glad to be so,
Tony. You mentioned you're going to talk about the military. When we look at what the previous administration did in terms of using our military as a laboratory for social experimentation, treating our men and women in the military as if they were lab rats, it's going to take years to build back the military to the strength that's needed to face the challenges that are out there in this world.
Well, you're quoting from one of the many op-eds that I wrote about this, the last presidency, because that's exactly what happened. The commander-in-chief has enormous latitude as to what he can do, he or she can do, with our armed forces. And you're absolutely right. What happened, and we're seeing this throughout our military, is they use them as the same words I use, lab rats in radical social engineering experiments. And if you can't fix that overnight. Every enlistee comes in with 4 years obligated service and 6 years of ready reserve. The young Americans who served with me in Vietnam were derided and disgusted by what they had when they came home, how they were accused. We just saw that. I actually had to watch it for my network, the Ken Burns documentary about Vietnam.
Right.
It took the better part of 10 years afterwards to repair our military.
Mm-hmm.
Richard Nixon did away with the draft. He gave 18-year-olds the right to vote with the 26th Amendment. He was castigated for all of what he did. And, of course, we ended up losing the war, not because of what happened on the battlefield, but what took place right here in the quarters of power in Washington. I use that as an example for what we're facing today. We had 8 years of a president who used the military for his own radical agenda. It can be called nothing but. They might have called it progressive, but it's progressive in the wrong direction. And it's going to take years to fix our military. It's not just buying more tanks and planes and bombs and guns.
It's building leaders.
Exactly. And so what I'm hoping for is that we will continue to have American families, God-fearing American families, will encourage their sons and daughters to serve in our armed forces. For at least the last 6 months, there's been a hope that what was there now be restored. And I'm seeing it. I still see guys who are unafraid to kneel in prayer and express themselves. I'm going to show a shot of that tomorrow. I don't want to tease too much of my what I'm going to say. Everybody will stay awake because they're all listening to us right now. But tomorrow afternoon, I'm going to show some examples of what we need a lot more of in our armed forces. And I also hope that the American people are going to, those of us who believe, let me put it my way. I know where I'm going, and I know why I'm going. There's nothing to do with how many medals I have, what rank I had, how good a column I have, war stories. It has everything to do with my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, came to this earth, lived a sin-free life, died in torture on a cross, and then rose from the dead so that you and I don't have to go to hell. Now, that's why I say I know where I'm going. What I'm hoping is that more Americans who feel that way will encourage their sons and daughters to give of themselves, and it's self-sacrificial, to serve our country in whatever capacity they can. I mean, we need really good teachers who know the Lord, not just in Christian schools and in homeschools, but literally in every school in America. We need them in every branch of government. We need them elected to office.
And when they're equipped with that understanding, they don't fear man.
Exactly.
And that is the crisis, I think, of our day, is the crisis of courage. Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, great to have you with us. Look forward to seeing you here at the Values Voter Summit.
As do I, my friend. Semper Fi, Marine.
Semper Fi. Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, one of our keynote speakers here at the Values Voter Summit this weekend. All right, yet another undercover video reveals the liberal slant of a former Democratic campaign operative who used to produce videos for the New York Times. James O'Keefe, Project Veritas, released a follow-up on this earlier this week, and he's going to join us here in just a moment. So that's coming up here. How much time we got here? Okay. All right. Well, let me bring him in here real quick. James, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, great to be with you.
Hey, thanks for sticking around. Sorry, we were wrapping up there with the colonel, and we're going to come up to a break here in just a moment, so I'm going to have to get you to hold over. But lay out what you uncovered with this undercover video.
Well, we released two videos this week. The first one showed an editor for the New York Times' video department basically talking about his agenda and how he manipulates the news, how he slants the news. He made a series of bizarre claims about conflicts of interest he has with the New York Times. It shows political bias there. It shows they have a specific agenda. He says he moves videos up to meet his personal agenda and moves videos down that don't. And then the second video showed how he has a relationship with people inside of YouTube that helps advance this political agenda. And there's a lot to unpack from the videos, but the New York Times has responded. They said that the statements by the reporter violated their ethical standards, and they're reviewing the situation. We don't know whether they fired him yet, but we have more videos to come.
Okay, James, hold on there. That music means we're up against a break. We're going to come back on the other side of that. James O'Keefe, my guest, we're going to continue this conversation. Then Sam Sorbo joins us to talk about their new movie, which is coming out. We're going to be premiering it here at showing it here at the Values Voter Summit. All that to come here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Are you worried about the moral direction of America? Do you feel powerless to make a difference? Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. Established in 1983 in Washington, D.C., Family Research Council conducts research, develops policy, drafts legislation, and educates policymakers, pastors, and the grassroots. It testifies before Congress and shapes public debate through the media and internet. Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about Family Research Council, please visit us at frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news. Again, that's frc.org.
In a free country like ours, it's easy to forget that slavery still exists. Human beings are being trafficked and sold for sex against their will. Human trafficking is a horrifying scourge that continues to haunt America, particularly through the proliferation of illegal online transactions between traffickers and buyers. As part of the FRC speaker series, Congresswoman Ann Wagner discusses congressional anti-human trafficking initiatives and how the conservative community can best be engaged in combating this horrific crime. Congresswoman Wagner, who introduced highly anticipated legislation in April that allows states and victims to fight online sex trafficking, focuses on online sex trafficking via Backpage.com and other websites, and confronting the demand for sex trafficking in American culture. Find out more about Congresswoman Wagner's recent legislation and ways you can help stop trafficking at frc.org/speakers. Again, that is frc.org/speakers.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God. But culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. Tomorrow, the Values Voters Summit gets underway in earnest. The President of the United States will be one of our first speakers tomorrow morning here. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right. James O'Keefe holding over to discuss with us his undercover videos exposing, surprise, surprise, media bias. James, thanks for sticking around. How prevalent do you think this media bias is?
Well, I mean, it's people talk a lot about bias, and it's almost become a cliche, but these videos actually go inside the New York Times. We took a hidden camera inside their newsroom, and we found their audience strategy editor, he's a position at the Times, saying the very reason he's there is for political reasons. He says he's trying to influence the election. He came from the presidential campaigns of Obama and Clinton in order to, quote, boycott Trump's hotels and boycott his businesses. He says he's not objective. And the managing editor for the New York Times responded by saying that that was not ethical behavior of one of their employees.
Well, it was not ethical to tell the truth about what they're really doing?
Exactly, exactly. So we don't know whether they're going to fire him or give him a promotion at this point, but we have more videos to come. This is our sort of MO, but if you haven't seen the video, I encourage you to go on YouTube and watch it. It's American Pravda, New York Times.
You know, and James, I know you got to go, but I've always found it amazing with the videos, and I watch the videos, and I appreciate the work that you do, and I know you and Lila did some stuff in the past, and Lila Rose is a good friend of mine, and the stuff that she's done with Planned Parenthood. It just always amazes me that these people are so willing to talk when they know they're doing something that really they don't want exposed. That amazes me.
Well, I mean, it's also a testament to our team, because it's not like we just walk in there gangbusters. We have to build the relationships with these folks over the course of sometimes months and draw them out. But there is a sense of arrogance. There is a real air of arrogance with this guy. And he makes a series of bizarre claims. He says that he's got a conflict of interest at the New York Times. We weren't able to corroborate it. But what type of person is this? And what are their hiring standards that they let these types of people work for them? It's really... there's no integrity there, and that's the what we're finding. They have a severe political agenda, and they don't want to admit it.
Yeah. James O'Keefe, thanks so much for joining us again. Appreciate the work you do.
Thanks.
All right, folks, to find out more, to check that out, go to TonyPerkins.com, and you can follow the links over. All right, as I mentioned, if you're just joining us, you hear the noise in the background. That's not my kids. That we're at the 12th Annual Values Voter Summit. Kicks off tomorrow morning. Actually, it's kind of starting tonight. We're on Radio Row in the exhibit hall, but tomorrow morning, several members of Congress will be here. The president will be speaking. My good friend, Congressman Steve Scalise, the majority whip, will be speaking tomorrow afternoon. We've got a great, great lineup. But one of the highlights of this year's Values Voter Summit is the screening of a new film, Let There Be Light, starring Kevin and Sam Sorbo. It will be released this Christmas.
No, October 27th.
October
20th.
Okay. Not at Christmas.
Not at Christmas.
Not at Christmas.
2 weeks from now.
All right. But if you come here, you can actually see it sooner.
Sooner.
Because we're going to be showing it tomorrow night here. Sean Hannity is the executive producer of the faith-based film. And the voice you just heard is connected to the body of Sam Sorbo. Sam, welcome to Washington
Watch. It's not an out-of-body voice. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's great to have you here at the Values Voter Summit. We're looking forward to this movie. And give us the history behind you and Kevin doing this movie.
So I just had the idea of this movie as a lark. I was thinking what it would look like if a confirmed atheist was really challenged on his worldview, if something really shook him up. And so I drew a character of a confirmed, basically the world's greatest atheist. And then I put him in a position where he has a near-death experience, and he sees something that just doesn't jive with what he thinks he should be seeing in a near-death experience if you hallucinate something. And from that, he goes into a huge tailspin. His life just spins out of control. It's a movie about overcoming. It's a movie about family. It's a movie about love and redemption and forgiveness. What I found is women love the movie. We tested it, and women love the movie. It makes you want to laugh and cry and stand up and cheer. Men love it even more, and I think it's because they feel represented. Because here's a guy who's fighting with God, fighting with his family, fighting with his wife, fighting to be a good father, but he really doesn't know how. And I think a lot of men are in one of those positions right now. And so there's even a line in the movie where his wife is sort of confronting him on his lifestyle and how he's making a living, because he's an atheist and he sells books. He's the world's greatest atheist, right? And he says, you know, it pays the bills, because that's all, you know, that's all she sees him as. And we have that sort of situation in our culture today where men are sort of sidelined.
These types of movies, the public actually wants them.
Oh, yeah.
Viewers want them. I mean, God is Not Dead.
God's Not Dead was huge.
And it was great. It was a great movie. Plus, I like the fact that it was filmed in Baton Rouge, a lot of it.
Yeah.
You know, I actually helped create the tax incentive when I was in the legislature there in Louisiana to try to draw more of those films in.
Success.
And five of my kids were born in the hospital that actually provided the site of the classroom there at the old women's hospital.
Oh, right, sure.
So
sure.
It was neat to watch.
So you've got a really strong attachment to God's Not Dead.
I do.
But it was a great film, and what's amazing is people approach my husband. He's very recognizable, and they approach him all the time. And it used to be for Hercules, but now it's for faith-based movies, and they just say, "Please make more of them."
Yeah.
Well, you know,
he did a great job. I thought I didn't actually know him as Hercules. I don't watch TV and don't watch all that. But
right.
I went. We took kids to watch the movie God Is Not Dead.
Thought
it was a great, great movie.
Yeah.
Great message. And I thought your husband did a great job.
Well, then you'll love this one.
Oh, I'm sure I will.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be watching it.
Good.
Let me ask you this, though. As a Christian in Hollywood, mm-hmm. making faith-based films, how do your colleagues in Hollywood respond?
You know, I'm so sorry. I'm going to have a fairly disappointing answer, because I'm not really in Hollywood. I stopped acting when right before I got married. My husband had three strokes. My fiance at the time had three strokes, and he needed me. So I basically walked away from my career then. I tried to get back into it, and my one-year-old daughter chased me down and scolded me for being away from home. And I know that because she said, no, 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 no. I picked her up put her on my hip, and she turned to the nanny and said, bye-bye. And so I realized then that I had to make a choice, and so I prioritized my kids. So I recently got back into acting, but I'm not really of Hollywood. Now, if you talk to Kevin, which I'm sure you will, I think tomorrow you're having Kevin on. He'll tell a little bit of a different story because Hollywood does not want to be confronted with truth or morals. And
really?
That's why
I didn't realize that.
And that's why this whole thing with Harvey Weinstein is such a problem for them. Because they're decrying the nastiness against women, but they really don't have a leg to stand on because where's their moral compass? They don't want one. They don't want to have one. And so I feel bad for the women who were accosted and who either put out or, you know, dealt with it in whatever way. But the fact is that for them to come out and say this is a bad thing, what's your metric?
I was just talking about that earlier in the program, how when morals are malleable, when there's no transcendent truth,
right,
in its popular opinion, that truth becomes a sword. It reminded me of the scripture where Jesus said, if you fall on the rock and you're broken, you can choose to do that, or the rock will fall and crush you. And the truth is, if we fall broken on the truth, we'll be healed.
Right.
But if we refuse to acknowledge the truth will fall on us and crush us.
Right.
And I think that's what we see here in Hollywood. And I said earlier that we're actually learning something from Hollywood this week.
Mm.
That in the fact that you treat truth as if it doesn't exist and morality as if it were relative, we're seeing that that comes back to bite you.
Well, and the weird thing is he says that he knew it was wrong. Well, if you know it's wrong, then you don't do it. That's how that works. You don't keep doing it if you know that it... But in any case,
it's tolerated. It's tolerated as long as there's not essentially a popular opinion that, wait a minute, that today is...
Oh, but they knew. No, but they knew. They knew that he was a bully. They knew that he mistreated people. They didn't know the extent. But really, what is the extent? I mean, Jesus said that if you look upon a woman with lust, then you've committed adultery. So are we really doing gray areas here?
Well, it looks like that when it reaches a certain volume or it gets to the ears of enough people, then it's wrong.
Well, the New York Times didn't think it was wrong last year. NBC didn't think it was wrong, though, you know, before that, or just recently, right?
Right.
So it's not really a time thing. It's just if they don't want to look at it, they will try to look the other way.
But what is it tomorrow? You know, when morality becomes relative and there's no longer a, as you said, a compass, a moral compass, you know, what's going to be the issue tomorrow that's going to trip somebody up in Hollywood?
And this is the thing, and you've really raised the proper point here, is that people have to understand that their voices matter. And if they want to hold on to the values that we have in this country, if they want to hold on to virtue, which is really the only reason this country exists, they're going to have to step up and show what they want. Now, we've got this great thing with the NFL. The American public came around and said, you know what, we don't support teams that kneel for the anthem. We want people to stand. And the NFL came around. Roger Goodell issued that statement and said, oh, okay, they have to stand. So now the American people are feeling this. They're, and by American people, I'm saying people, middle America,
right.
You know, wholesome faith, family, freedom, right?
Right.
So
I've heard that before.
So here's the thing. We've been guilty of supporting the culture that we're seeing now through Harvey Weinstein.
And what... Going back to the NFL, what got the NFL's attention was the dollar. When people start voting with... I mean, there was outrage,
right.
But people
right.
quit watching.
Right.
People quit going to the
That's
games.
That's exactly correct.
But there's... At the very personal level, there is a lesson to be learned here. That when we accept God's truth and we choose to live by it, that's not a confinement. It's safety. Because when we look, you know, young people are taught, and the messages from Hollywood is,
yes.
you know, morality is restrictive. It
right.
prevents you from having fun. It
right.
prevents you from exploring. When in reality, that provides freedom because you can then be who you are within the confines of how God created you, and you don't have to worry about what's going to happen tomorrow.
Right.
Because you're living as you've been created to live in
I mean, imagine how these people feel who are, you know, one day male, one day female. I mean, there's a lot of fear in there, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
I don't know how that that works. When you refuse to acknowledge the truth, then everything's malleable. The world isn't a safe place.
It's a confusing place.
But what I wanted to get back to was the fact that we have options in our films. I'm providing a film that upholds Christian values. I'm hoping that people will see that as an opportunity to send Hollywood a message that they support that kind of filmmaking. And if you do, I'm not saying that Hollywood will be able to answer that call, but there will be other independent filmmakers who can.
All right, before we run out of time, we're talking about Let There Be Light. Sam Sorbo, my guest, her and Kevin, releasing a new film. Sean Hannity is the executive producer. Comes out October 27th, and it'll be in theaters across the country.
It's in theaters across the country. Go to lettherebelightmovie.com to find the theater near you. And you can also, we do group ticket sales, so if you want to organize a group, you can go on the website lettherebelight.com and find out all that information.
Is that a Friday night? What day of the week?
It is a Friday, yeah. It opens on a Friday night.
And it'll be going through the weekend?
Oh, for sure. Well, yeah. Okay. It's a national release. So if
well, I know how
if they show up on opening weekend, then it'll stay another week.
Right, right.
But if you don't show up on opening weekend,
so
it may not last.
So churches, you just heard they have group sales,
yeah.
Group ticket sales. So it'd be a great time to fill up a theater on that weekend.
Yeah, there are a lot of churches who are doing that. But I'm encouraging everybody to keep going. Yeah,
because we, I know we did that on several movies on the Sunday night. We cancel church and go to the theater.
That.
And invite people to the theater and buy an extra ticket and bring a neighbor. Sam Sorbo, thanks so much for being with us, and thanks for being here at the Values Voter Summit.
It's awesome.
And tomorrow night, if you're here, there's a free screening of Let There Be Light here at the Values Voter Summit. So if you're here, you can see it. If you're not, well, you're going to have to wait till October 27th.
Go to the theaters.
All right. Sam, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
All right, folks, the Washington Watch is about to, we're about to wrap up here for the night, but the Values Voter Summit just getting kicked off, and there's still room for you. We've got room for a few more folks here. Tomorrow morning we start at 8:45 a.m., and we have several members of Congress that will be here. We'll be sometime tomorrow morning, President Donald Trump. We'll be speaking to the Values voters that are gathered here from all across the country. And if you can't get here, if you absolutely cannot get here, you can still participate. ValuesVotersSummit.org will be webcasting the entire event live there on the website. So if you can't get here, that's where you can watch, ValuesVotersSummit.org. And let me encourage you to, as Sam was talking about, engagement. You know, I'm encouraged by the last election where, you know, 81% of evangelicals voting for Donald Trump, they got engaged. We have to continue to be engaged, whether it's the national anthem, whether it's sexual harassment, whether it's human trafficking, whatever it may be, there is morality and we have to stick up for it. All right, folks, don't go away. Don't go too far away. We'll be back tomorrow, Lord willing. But until then, remember the words of the Apostle Paul in Ephesians 6, when you've done everything, just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.